Welcome back to your second favorite film podcast. I am your host, Bradley, coming to you live from Vancouver, Canada, where today we are screening This Week in Movies, the weekly film podcast where we discuss the movies we watched this week in a spoiler-free way so you know what to watch and what to not. It's been a big movie week, so we have a big show for you today. This week's episode is about zombies, revenge, repressed sexual tension, dressmaking, passionless orgies, and staring at penises and calling them weird. I'm going to leave it up to you to figure out which one goes with which film. We're going to cover new release 2026, first of the year, called Bury the Dead, two great films from 2025, Sorry Baby and It Was Just an Accident, Pride and Prejudice, Paul Thomas Anderson's Phantom Thread, and finally, Stanley Kubrick's final film, Eyes Wide Shut. I'll of course give you my overall thoughts and a rating for each film. What is the point of this if we're not rating things arbitrarily? I'll cover what popped, what didn't, and finally pass along a recommendation about whether I think you should watch the movie. If you wouldn't mind, at this point, putting away your cell phones, finishing up any conversations you might have going on, and grab your popcorn because it's finally time to talk about some movies. We are going to jump right in with the only new release I watched this week. It's called We Bury the Dead. Now, this film on Letterboxd says it's 2024, but we're going to run into this problem a lot. It released in Canada in 2026, specifically on January 2nd, and I want to say, bold move releasing your film on January 2nd, but it worked. It was the only new release in the movies this week. I wanted to go to the movies, so boom, there it was. It's directed by Zach Hilditch. I'm not familiar with Zach Hilditch's game, but he directed the zombie movie. It stars Daisy Ridley from Star Wars. You know Daisy Ridley. She's on the poster. She's the only name on the poster, so everyone else is just thrown right under the bus. You don't know him. However, I will say there's an actor in this movie called Brenton Thwaites. He's either Australian or does a sick Australian accent, and I was endeared by him, so I'm giving a shout-out to Brenton Thwaites as well. Just as I mentioned, the only reason I went to see We Bury the Dead is because it was the only new film in cinemas, and I do have to say, if you're going to be the only new release in early January, a fun zombie movie is not the worst kind of release. I had a good time. If I was to try and tell you what this movie is about, I'm not sure I could exactly, but I'll do my best. This is a zombie film, so it has all the post-apocalyptic vibes. However, the zombies are only contained in this film to Tasmania, Australia, and that's told to you at the beginning. I'm not going to spoil anything here. So in Tasmania, Australia, there are the zombies, and you kind of figure out how there became zombies in Tasmania, Australia, but the rest of the world is unaffected. Now, there's some form of international coalition, or maybe not, I couldn't say, like Tasmanian authorities, Australian authorities, American authorities, worldwide authorities, whatever. And they're trying to clean up the zombie mess from Tasmania. You know, a bunch of people instantly died or became zombies. That's just a big mess you gotta clean up. Because the zombies are only contained to Tasmania, they all have a lot of loved ones sprinkled around the rest of the world who, like, love them and care about them and are kind of mad and sad and upset that their loved ones are either dead or zombies now, and that kind of sucks. So a lot of those people, a non-zero amount of those people from around the world, volunteer and get visa waivers. That's a big part of the first 5 minutes of this film, is visa waivers to come and help with the cleanup. And this creates interesting dynamics because you have people actively kind of, you know, figuring out the zombie situation who have loved ones in that situation and want to, like, see them and find out what happened to them and all the rest. So that's kind of the inherent drama, is Daisy Ridley and co. have loved ones that are either dead or zombies in Tasmania, Australia, and they've traveled there to figure out what happened to them. For my overall thoughts, I feel compelled to state at the top that I don't normally love these zombie and post-apocalyptic movies. I'm not sure what it is about these films. Maybe it's just the Walking Dead of it all kind of seeping into the films. I just find them to usually not be very well done. And if they're not very well done, I kind of want them to be at least very entertaining. And I find they're usually not very entertaining either. So I went into the cinema thinking that I was not going to like it and that it would be a bit of an uphill battle. However, pleased to report, I had a good time with this. I think the overall quality is good. I think the quality of storytelling is good. There's nothing offensively bad about this movie, and it was a really easy sit for the 90 minutes, which is really great, because when you go in thinking you're really going to hate something, even if it's just kind of okay at the end, that feels really good. So I would say this movie is just okay, but because I don't normally like movies like this, just okay was like a real win for me. This film has a very interesting premise about how the zombies came to exist and coexist with the world, which I just thought changed things up for a bit. It's still a little wonky. It's still a little weird. It takes up kind of the first part of the movie to explain what happened to create the zombies and the dead people, etc., in the first place. But at least it was different. It was unique because the zombies in this film are only in one portion of the world and the rest of the world is like relatively unaffected. I found that to be a bit of an interesting take on this kind of film, which really, you know, helped me engage with it a little bit. It has a specific message it's trying to get across, which I really enjoy. This is a film that is trying to tell you something, and the zombies and the characters and the journey they go on in this film are kind of all in service of trying to get that message across. I think oftentimes and more broadly in this film, it's a little bit on the nose. They kind of like tell you straight up what they want you to get out of the movie and what they're trying to explain to you or what they're hoping you will connect with. However, I still thought that the journey to get there and the way they did choose to tell that story, was good overall, and I enjoyed it. And so I got to the end and I got to like the messaging they were trying to get across, and I was like, okay, I can vibe with this. That was fun. Ultimately, it's a pretty meh experience. There's no insane high points. Like, there's no point in this film where you're gonna be like, oh my god, I've never seen that before. Oh, that was the best thing ever. There's no like moment where you're gonna be like, holy shit, that was the funniest thing I've ever heard, where you're just gonna be cackling. But it really does avoid any like awful low points either. There was no point in this film where I was like groaning in my seat or like, oh my god, when's this gonna end? I wasn't like checking my watch. I was pretty locked in for the whole 90 minutes, which was awesome. And so yeah, I would say, you know, okay movie. It's not great. It's not terrible. It's a fun zombie flick. No insane high points, but no insane low points either. You can kind of just kind of coast through from beginning to end with this one. Every film we talk about on this show, of course, gets rated on the pop scale, a 6-point scale my genius brain devised for me to rate movies based on popcorn. Lowest tier, worst ranking you can get is burned popcorn. No one likes that shit. It tastes awful. No one wants burned popcorn. It's awful. After that, we have stale popcorn. It's edible, but no one wants to eat it. Then we have bland. Nothing great, nothing terrible, just run-of-the-mill bland popcorn is edible. People eat it all the time if they're like calorie counting or whatever, but it doesn't taste great. Then we have warm popcorn. Warm popcorn is delicious, all right? It's bland, but maybe it just came out of the microwave, and the warmth is at least nice. It's like having soup broth. Even if there's nothing in the soup, just the fact that it's warm is comforting. Then we have fresh popcorn. Everyone loves fresh popcorn. That rocks. And then we have perfectly popped. That's the highest tier of the scale. It's just perfect popcorn. At any point, any tier can be distinguished with the butter distinction. Most people want butter on their popcorn. So if it's the best version of a bland movie, I can add butter to it. So at any point, you can have that rating with butter. If you have a perfectly popped movie, you can also have the added distinction of layered butter. It's highly sought after on this scale. So the highest rating you can get is a perfectly popped film with layered butter, and the lowest rating you can get is burned popcorn with no butter. And now that that's explained, and feel free to email me with your problems with that system, I'm going to say that We Bury the Dead is bland without butter. It's just a bland experience. No insane high points, no insane low points. It just kind of cruises you along in a very inoffensive zombie movie kind of way. What popped for me though? Setting in Tasmania rocks. I've lived in Tasmania for a little bit. I love Tasmania. It was fun to see a movie set in Tasmania with all of the Australian accents. There's a point in this movie where there's a big sign that says like Bogan access only. Hilarious. Loved that. Love Tasmania. And just being in Australia in a movie is interesting. Not a lot of films I watch are set in Australia, so I was having a good time. I thought the zombies themselves were well constructed. There's a little kind of more going on than just like, let's do the lowest common denominator zombie makeup. And so I thought the zombies themselves, the way they moved, the way they were choreographed, the way the makeup was done, were well constructed. They were believable zombies and ones that I appreciated. I thought the motivations of the characters for interacting with the zombies stood out to me. Like, normally it's that the zombies are bad and you're good and you're trying to like kill the zombies so you don't become a zombie. And there's a lot more to it. Like I mentioned at the top, the reason why the characters are kind of actively trying to go towards the zombies is inherently interesting and just a fun flip on how these movies normally go. So I thought that popped out. I thought the length of the film was just right. I love a movie that when you get to the end, where you're kind of just like letting me out at the peak, right when I was about to say, when does this film end, is when it ends. This is the perfect length of film. When there was about 10 minutes left in this movie, I was in my chair being like, I hope there's about 10 minutes left in this movie. They nailed the length of the film. It doesn't overstay its welcome, but it's long enough to kind of give you the message it was trying to send and hit all the character beats, and I thought that was fantastic. The logistics of the zombies impacting only one area of the world I thought was interesting and just, like, again, a fun little flip on everything. And finally, the last thing that really popped out to me was the core mission and journey that Daisy Ridley was going on. I was interested in that from the moment it was kind of, you know, told to me till the moment there was a conclusion to it. I just kind of really enjoyed that mission, her trying to kind of go to this zombie area in Tasmania and do what she was trying to do. Of course, I don't want to tell you what that was in case you watch this movie, but that whole journey that Daisy Ridley goes on really worked for me, and since that's the main part of this movie, it was pretty crucial that it popped out and that I enjoyed it. What didn't pop? What did not pop about We Bury the Dead? Well, listen here, folks. The geopolitics in this movie is fucking weird. I don't know what's going on. It starts with, like, the Americans being bad, and then one of the characters is an American, and they, like, are kind of mad at her for being American, but it never really amounts to anything. I couldn't tell you, or maybe I knew at one point and I can't remember 3 days later, like, which government is trying specifically to clean this up and how are they all working together and why are we even getting this many civilians to do this war? None of the geopolitics and, like, military civilian stuff really made any sense to me. It doesn't, like, it's not harmful to the film, but they do take some time trying to explain it, so the fact that it didn't work for me does stand out. The zombie evolution didn't quite work for me. I think the zombies themselves are well constructed. The zombies in this film go through, like, an evolution where, you know, if they're zombies for long enough, they become, you know, different. Again, I don't want to tell you what the differences are, but they do become, like, different the longer they're alive as zombies without getting killed again. And that didn't really work for me. At no point was there, like, an evolved zombie where I was like, oh, I'm glad we went through this whole zombie evolution plot line so I could better understand this. So that kind of popped out as something they took some time on that didn't really work for me. And then finally, the last thing that didn't really work for me in We Bury the Dead is that there are points in this film where tonally it's just off. It feels like you're being transported from one movie to another movie to another movie, and sometimes that really works. Like, some of the best movies ever made really genre hop, and they understand how to blend genres really well. I think within each genre of film this was trying to be, it was successful. I thought, like, blending of the genres in acts and at certain points with certain lines and certain sequences didn't quite work for me. It was a little bit jarring. Again, it was entertaining the whole time. Like, I didn't not enjoy watching it, but at times I could just feel the friction of the different genres and things the director and the editor and whoever were trying to juggle in this movie. So those were the three things that didn't pop out to me. As a recommendation, I would say I had fun at the movies, and I'm not upset that I went. And if you think you'll like a zombie movie in January, then you might want to go to the movies to watch it. I wouldn't say you need to go to the movies to watch this, though. I think if you get to the end of 2026 and you're like, ah, shit, I forgot to watch We Bury the Dead, you're not going to have missed out on anything people are chatting about. So if you like zombie flicks, you like going to the movies, this will not, like, disappoint you in that way. But if you're not someone who wants to rush to the movies, if you're only going to see 4 or 5 movies at the cinema in a year, you don't need to rush to see this one. This brings us now to Sorry Baby, one of my favorite films of 2025. This one is directed by Eva Victor and stars, notably, Eva Victor and Naomi Aki. Those are the two actresses where I really knew them. There's a few other familiar faces kicking around, but those were the two where I was like, ah, I'm familiar with your game. I watched this a second time. So this chat here is on a second rewatch. I watched it earlier in the year, I want to say April or May, when it released. I went to this right away. I was excited about it. I heard good things about it, and I was blown away by it. I really loved it. At the time, my girlfriend had wanted to come to see that movie, but she was working, and I was going to the cinema, and we just can't get to all the movies together, so she hadn't seen it. I was chatting about it all year. This is one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite performances, and so my girlfriend was like, you know, I'd love to catch this, and then VIFF, the Vancouver International Film Festival Cinema, was re-screening the movie in its Best of 2025 showcase, and so I was like, hey, we're gonna go to this. They had two screenings, we caught one of them, and it was once again excellent. My overall thoughts on this film, other than it's excellent, are that this is a very, you know, powerhouse triple threat performance from Eva Victor. Eva Victor is the main star of this movie, and she is sensational. Truly one of my favorite performances of the year. She's also the writer and director of this film, and this film is extraordinarily well written and well directed. This is one of my favorite screenplays of the year. One of the movies where I most notably was, like, in awe of how it was directed and how it was staged mentioned how it was shot, and the film in which I enjoyed the performance the most, right? Like, I just really have been blown away both times by Eva Victor's performance. And I think being able to achieve that triple threat and really excelling in all three categories is truly exceptional stuff. So I really want to leave you with the impression that if you watch the movie or you don't watch the movie or whatever, that Eva Victor deserves all the plaudits for this triple threat performance, because she is sensational in all aspects here. This film is about trauma. It follows this vibe or this kind of storytelling that I really enjoyed this year, where there's an inciting incident, something happens to one or more of the characters, and then there's no real plot from that point. We're kind of just following them along their journey, kind of dealing with the impact of this incident throughout their life. And that is the same here. So there's an incident that happens, and we kind of follow Eva Victor's character as she kind of goes through her life handling this incident. And it's a really great portrayal of trauma for one, right? So it really kind of hammers home that everybody, no matter who you are, no matter what situation you're in, no matter where you live, we will all experience trauma. Now, the character in this film experiences a certain kind of trauma that you might have or might not have experienced, but you're able to, I suppose it's not inaccessible, right? She makes the trauma accessible for everybody, even if it's not your or that specific trauma that you've experienced. And then she kind of takes you through these wonderfully constructed vignettes of how and when that trauma impacts us in our lives, in good ways, in bad ways. It kind of showcases how we heal from trauma, but it never really goes away. It kind of just scars, how you can go long periods of time without even remembering anything bad happened, and then all of a sudden, you just feel it again. This film is simultaneously one cohesive story that you can follow, but also these individual vignettes that kind of perfectly mold together. And I've just never seen a film handled trauma and the effects of trauma and the healing from trauma in this specific way. And I just really thought that that was a sensational part of the movie. The other thing I would say in my overall thoughts is that it's so incredibly funny and clever as well. This is the film that best balances, certainly of the year, but more importantly, one of the films in the last couple of years for me, that best balances, you know, telling you a story about events or about situations that are not really nice to watch or listen to or anything. Like, it's pretty horrific, some of the things that happen. But this film is so funny and so clever, and it never feels like you're just sitting with it. Have you ever watched a movie? I actually, you know, there's another movie, it was just an accident, which we'll talk about in this pod, where I kind of felt as I was sitting through, I was like, oh my, like, you're kind of just like, holy shit. And it just feels like you're getting hit over and over and over again. And there's no like relief from it. This film is packed full of relief. Like, you really, really get to love these characters. It's funny, it's clever, it's witty. Some of the biggest laugh out loud moments in the year for me were from this movie that is fundamentally about trauma. And so I just thought that was a really, really sensationally well done part of the screenplay and part of the way this film is constructed. And so I just, overall, this just makes for an incredible, incredible movie. On the pop scale, I'm saying this is fresh with butter. I think there's a little bit of work we can do with this film. However, it's really, really great. I'm adding butter to it. It's not quite perfectly popped, but it is really, really close. Interestingly enough, my girlfriend, I thought for sure, because I loved this movie so much. And it's not really a movie made for me specifically, and I just really loved it the first time I watched it. When we came out the second time, my girlfriend, I think, still really liked it, but didn't like it as much as I did. And I found that interesting. And she's like, oh, maybe I misjudged you. I really didn't think that this was the kind of movie, now that I've seen it, that this was the kind of movie you would like. So I think, you know, me and my girlfriend are kind of two different, you know, sides of the same coin here, where I think anywhere from like she liked it but didn't love it, whereas I really love this film, is kind of what I would expect. But I'm gonna give it fresh with butter on the pop scale. I already got ahead a lot of what popped for me, but I'll go over the ones that I haven't. Again, I think the storytelling device of having one inciting incident and kind of following the impacts of it through the character without a very specific plot in mind really, really worked for me in this film. There are some incredible shots and directing choices in this film. I don't want to spoil any of them, so I'm not even going to mention it, because both times I've seen this film now, there are three moments I can think of off the top of my head, but several others. Just a way a shot is framed, a way a camera is held, a way, you know, a sequence of time is portrayed. It's just so interesting, and she has such a good eye for how to take the camera and allow it to kind of pace and structure the film. And so there's just so many incredible shots and directing choices in this one. Eva Victor is sensational. I thought her performance as kind of the main character was also really great, really, really well calibrated. It helps, I think, when you're writing a role for yourself, maybe. I think she's playing a role that is really unforgiving in the sense that if you even get it tonally wrong a little bit, it just feels like it doesn't work at all, and she absolutely nails it. So that really stood out to me. It's extraordinarily clever with its humor. It's funny, and it tells jokes, and those jokes are, you know, in a very comedic timbre, right? Like they're almost like they're from another movie at points, but they feel so perfectly placed in this one. So that really jumped out. And finally, the last thing, kind of Nolan-esque, we're jumping timelines a little bit. This film does not start at the beginning. It kind of starts in the middle, then goes back to the beginning, then swaps to the, you kind of like jump around the timelines a little bit, and the film has chapter dividers in it. And I think that that was a very, very good use of that storytelling structure in this film. What didn't pop for me in Sorry Baby? There's only one thing, and it only didn't pop for me upon reflection when I was writing out my notes for this episode of the podcast, and that was the logistics of the schooling institution, which is the setting for this film. The setting for this film involves a school, there are professors, there are students, all of our main characters are kind of students, and eventually they grow up, and several of them end up working at the same school, but they're only like a handful of years older, but they have like, you know, really important positions at this school, and I was just trying to figure out exactly how the logistics of the schooling institution worked. It kind of felt like to me we were fudging the numbers a bit on how a university would, you know, do its staffing and what achievements could be expected from the students, et cetera, in order to kind of keep everything moving along. It wasn't something that bothered me even a little bit during the movie, which is great, but just kind of thinking about it now, I did realize that the logistics of the schooling institution in which is a main player in this film don't exactly make a ton of sense and are kind of just whatever they need to be for the film to work. That was the only thing in this movie that really popped out as not quite working for me. As a recommendation, I would say absolutely yes. If you're able to watch a movie with even a little bit of difficult subject matter, this movie is really funny and really humorous and does have a lot of reprieve in it, so you're not going to be like you're just stewing in it the whole time. If you're able to go through some sequences with some difficult subject matter in your movie, it's not even that visceral. It just is about difficult subject matter in those situations. I would say this is one you should absolutely like run out and figure out. Rent it on YouTube, go to the video store, like wherever the video store, do those even exist? Go wherever you gotta go. Go to the cinema to watch Sorry Baby, because it really, really is worth it. Next up, we have It Was Just an Accident, a 2025 release, directed by Jafar Panahi. Of course, this film won the Palme d'Or, and so I was really, really excited to go and see it. In terms of notable stars, I did not know any actors that were in this film. I went on Letterboxd. I kind of looked up the actors in the cast section. I kind of, you know, just went to see what other films they were in. A lot of the main players in this movie have not acted in a lot of other films. This is a real discovery of a lot of amazing actors. The performances in this film are great, but there was just no notable stars going in for it or into it for me. However, I wanted to note that all of these people give amazing performances. My context for watching it was that I missed it. I missed it when it released. I couldn't find a screening. I was working, etc., etc. You know how it is when you like a movie's in the cinemas and you can't quite get to it, and it's really frustrating. And then it's out of the cinema, but it's not on streaming or anywhere. You can't rent it for a long time. That was what was happening here. And then my favorite local cinema, The Rio, here in Vancouver, put up a few screenings of It Was Just an Accident, and I made it to one, and I was not disappointed. It's hard to say exactly what It Was Just an Accident is about, but I kind of the kickstarting nature of this film is that the inciting incident is that there is a man who kind of comes across somebody he thinks might have been a person who previously tortured him and several other people while they were in prison years back. But he's not quite sure if that is the person. So he kind of is stuck in this moment where he's very angry and wants to take revenge on this person he thinks has tortured him and his friends from a prison camp a while back, but also can't exactly confirm his identity. And the movie just kind of kicks off from there. And I don't want to say anything else so I don't spoil it, but I would might say that's the inciting incident really early in the movie. This is a fantastic film about revenge, cycles of violence, and questioning your own morality. This is a really good getting the gang back together film, which is awesome. You know, we meet so many fun characters. Any film that has like the Scooby-Doo aspect of going through, this one's literally like in a van collecting characters, and each character is so distinct and unique and fun and has their own motivations. All of the characters are really well realized. Sometimes you get the gang together and you're like, why did we get a gang together? Not in this film. Really, really good film for the getting the gang together subgenre. It's not really a happy film you can enjoy watching per se. There are some really funny moments in it, and some moments where you really get to like just, you know, laugh at a thing someone's doing, or someone goes off on a big soliloquy or monologue that's pretty funny. Mostly though, you just kind of sit in the chair and this film happens in front of you and you just watch it. It's not a happy film. I'm really glad I saw it though. I'm really, really glad I went to see it. So my overall thoughts are that it is a fantastic film. It's not an easy sit all the time, but it's a film definitely worth watching, especially if you are into a movie that's trying to tell you something about important issues like revenge and cycles of violence and questioning your own morality, etc., etc. On the pop scale, I'm saying It Was Just an Accident is fresh. I don't have quite as high opinion of it as the people who like it the most, but it's far, far, far from even a mediocre film. It really is in that category where I'm really glad that I went to see it. I don't know if I'll be watching it again, but I made the effort. I went to it and it didn't disappoint me in that regard. And I felt like this was the film that challenged me the most recently. Like, it's been a couple of months since I had a film really challenge me, and I've been thinking about it ever since I watched it. So yeah, this movie's fresh. It's really good. It's worth seeing. Again, I don't have the highest opinion of it compared to the people who would say it's perfectly popped, but I'm pretty close there, just underneath. What popped out to me, the getting the game back together, we've already talked about, but very well done in this film. This film, It Was Just an Accident, has one of the best ending sequences in movies. Like, it's certainly the best of the year for me, the best I can remember seeing in the cinema for a while. The ending 60 seconds of this film are so fucking good. I can't even begin to explain to you how good, like, it's just perfect. It's so well done. Jafar Panahi, he really did well with this entire film. And this whole film, it was filmed in secret as well. Jafar Panahi is someone who I believe is wanted by the Iranian government, but in any case, had to film this movie in secret. And so that kind of adds something that popped out to me. However, his directing, the sound, everything for that last kind of 45, 60 second sequence is incredible. I'd say the last 30 minutes of the movie are sensational as well. Definitely the highlight, but that last scene is incredible. And the last thing that really popped out to me was that Iran and Azerbaijan are great settings for a film. I believe this film is set in Azerbaijan, and that the events that I'm talking about from the prison camp happened in Iran. I'm not sure if it's like northern Iran where kind of it connects to Azerbaijan or not. However, just this kind of area of the world as a setting for a film really stuck out to me, and I thought it was used to great effect. Obviously a place in which Jafar Panahi can pull from to make a film that I'm compelled by. So I really thought that I think it's Azerbaijan, but I'll add Iran in there just in case that's part of the mix in terms of where this film was set. Really, really stuck out to me. There was only one thing that kind of popped out to me as something that didn't quite work, and that was that not every character for me got a proper catharsis. Like, a really good getting the gang together movie, I'm not sure it's a great, like, getting the gang separated at the end movie. I got to the end and some characters get this really great catharsis, like they went through the whole story, and other characters I feel like just don't get. I was really invested in what their catharsis was going to be like, and then it just didn't happen for them exactly in a way that I thought was interesting, or sometimes not at all. And so it really stood out to me where I got to the end of the film and like I was like, oh, okay, this didn't quite pop for me. I would have hoped that more of the characters in the gang that we got together got to have some time spent at the end finding some kind of catharsis. With regard to a recommendation, I would definitely recommend it for folks who want to watch something and engage with the moral questions it's throwing at you. Do not sit down and expect this to be a super entertaining kind of action flick. If that's what you're hoping to watch, this is not it at all. But if you're hoping to watch a really great movie with interesting characters, interesting motivations, and in a really great setting that's just really well constructed, that's trying to tell you something and trying to make you question how you view the world on these really important issues, then I think this is absolutely worth watching. There are some standout moments, though. Best use, I will say this, the only spoiler I'll give, best use of a debit card machine and a tap machine for your bank card in any film I've ever seen. It's just so funny, so great. And so, yeah, I would recommend it if you want to sit down and really go through this film and engage with its moral questions. If you're looking for something to kind of, you know, make you feel better about the world, though, I'm not sure that this is the one for you. Now we're at the point of the podcast where we're getting to older films and rewatches, baby, or maybe first watches of older films, whatever. We got Pride and Prejudice up next, 2005, directed by Joe Wright. Notable stars: Keira Knightley, Matthew McFadden, Rosamund Pike, Carey Mulligan, Donald Sutherland, Judi Dench, and Tom Hollander. What the fuck did I just... That is some star-ass power in your film. This was released in 2005, I believe. Yeah, it was. The reason we watched this... It was the first day of 2026, January 1. It was the new year, and my girlfriend and I, we always argue over which version of Pride and Prejudice is the correct version. Mine is this film. This film is just my favorite thing in the world. I love it so much. So, you know, Keira Knightley's my Elizabeth, Matthew McFadden's my Mr. Darcy, et cetera, et cetera. My girlfriend, who does really love this movie, is more partial, though, to the TV show. It's like, who's your James Bond, who's your Spider-Man, et cetera, et cetera. So we've agreed in the past that we would watch the movie and the TV miniseries to kind of see which one was better, or at least to just engage with the other's point of view. So first day of the year, what's our first film of 2026 going to be? We had to go with this absolute banger, Pride and Prejudice, and I'm not disappointed at all that this was the first film I watched this year. My overall thoughts are that this film just fucking rocks. It's so much fun. I love it so much. But if you want more than that, and I'm assuming you do, I'll say this. It's a sensational film. It's perfectly romantic. Like, there are some romance movies where you just roll your eyes at the romance of it all. No. Every time this film even attempts to be romantic or sexy, it is the most romantic and the sexiest thing you've ever seen in your entire life. The whole world of Pride and Prejudice in this film just feels so alive. It's so well rendered. It's so well realized. From the setting, to the costumes, to the casting, to the writing, to the characterization, to the acting, to literally every fucking thing about this movie absolutely rocks and just feels like a breath of fresh air. I said on the TikTok it was like going to the Disneyland of cinema, and I mean it. This film is great. It really is just a guilty pleasure you don't need to feel guilty about. I'm saying this is perfectly popped, and you can hate me for it. I don't give a shit. This movie rocks. It's perfectly popped. I'm not giving it butter or layered butter. I'll withhold those for the truly top tier movies ever made. But this is a perfectly popped film. I think this. I don't know what to say. I don't even know what to say. I'm just in. Just thinking about it melts my brain. That's how much I love this movie. What popped out to me? What stands out? The casting and performances are so good. It starts with the writing. There are like five Bennett sisters in this movie. Then there's all the gentlemen. There's so much overlap in the characters where you could get their motivations confused, or you could just, it could so easily feel like these are all the same character, just with different names. No. Not in Pride and Prejudice, baby. Each of these characters is distinct, unique, is bringing a great energy to the whole thing. There are six or seven really iconic performances in here. It's really great. Everyone who came into this movie, it's like watching Greta Gerwig's Little Women. You either came in really famous or left really famous or were so talented you became really famous later. Judi Dench is like just a really, like when you have Judi Dench in a small supporting role in a film and she's just like a normal performance because everyone else is so great, you know you're doing great. So the performances and casting in this film are amazing. I want to say this film does the best job, maybe not ever, but, you know, it's up in the S tier of movies that captures romance without being traditionally romantic. It's all of the yearning and the missed connections and the missed understandings and the just wanting to be together but not quite being able to make it work. So much of this film can be felt in so many other films, and it feels like it's not only inspired other films that have come since, but pulls so perfectly from films that have come before it. The whole romance is really well captured. And finally, I think the juggling of storylines is really, really good here. Again, we have like five Bennett sisters, and four of them get like satisfying whole ass journeys. We take some time for like a friend of the family to have a whole journey. All of the gentlemen mostly get their own, you know, full complete journey as well. There's a lot of story here, there's a lot of character, and they all kind of perfectly mesh together. And the way that's juggled really stood out to me as something I really, really appreciated. There are two things that didn't quite pop for me, so I hate to do this to PP, my favorite movie, PNP here, but I gotta do it, okay? The character of Mr. Wickham doesn't always work for me. This is the one area in which the miniseries might win me over later. I think Mr. Wickham is a little underdeveloped. A little bit underdeveloped, all right? So if you're familiar with the book and the character of Mr. Wickham, I think we could have done five more minutes on Mr. Wickham at some point to kind of further develop the character, but that's okay. And finally, some bits and bobs about how far everything is away from everything else. At some points, they can walk. At some points, they need to ride horses. I never quite know how far away anything is. I've been to England a whole bunch of times, but because I've been there when cars and trains exist, I know how long it takes to get everywhere in like my world, but not in theirs. I don't know how far. Like, there's a point where, you know, Judy Dench, like, the characters kind of go to Judy Dench, and then Judy Dench is coming to the characters, and it kind of feels like that took 5 minutes, but I don't actually know. The movie passes time by just saying, remember this thing that happened last April? And you're like, what the fuck, is it, like, November now? Like, is that, right? So, some of the bits and bobs about how far away everything is and how time is passed along in this world didn't quite work for me. And I hate to admit it for my beloved Pride and Prejudice, but I had to do it. Those are the things that didn't pop. If I were to recommend this movie, you damn well know that I'm telling you to stop this podcast and turn it on and just enjoy the best 2 hours. There's no person who shouldn't watch this movie. You don't need to like it. You don't need to like the genre. You don't need to like the story. You don't need to like the book. Just put on this movie and just watch it for 2 hours. You're going to have a great time. I recommend it to everyone. I think yes, absolutely, capital Y-E-S, you should watch Pride and Prejudice. Only two films left. Boy, howdy, this was a big movie week pour moi. We have Phantom Thread, released in 2017, directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. Notable stars, Daniel Day-Lewis. And, you know, he's obviously, like, the best actor of the last however many decades. He's so good. And Daniel Day-Lewis is once again throwing down. He's slapping his wiener on the table in this movie and saying, I'm the best actor ever. He's so freaking good. Vicky Kripes is in this film, and she's amazing. And Leslie Manville is bringing the heat in this movie as well. Those are kind of the three notable stars, I would say, in Phantom Thread. My context for watching. Once again, the Rio coming in hot. You're going to get this with Eyes Wide Shut. And just put it on their calendar. I just looked at the calendar, and it said Phantom Thread was this week. And I was like, you know I'm showing up and paying my $13 and sitting my ass down and watching Phantom Thread. Just one of my favorite movies of all time. Probably my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson. I just think it's really sensational. If you're not familiar with this film, it's hard with PTA because so many of his films, it's hard to believe the same person who made Boogie Nights also made Phantom Thread and then also made One Battle After Another. So you kind of got to juggle a whole bunch of things here. This film is about a man named Reynolds Woodcock, who is a dressmaker, and he kind of, through his dressmaking, finds a muse. And then him and this muse, played by Vicky Kripes, just go on a journey. And Leslie Manville is his sister, and she's involved. So I don't want to say anything else about the film. But it's a film where a dressmaker named Reynolds Woodcock, my apologies, finds a muse and then goes on a journey with that muse. Overall thoughts. This film fucking rocks. It has a fantastic restraint and detail in its storytelling. It is not a fast-paced movie, and yet you are fully engrossed by it. It is utterly captivating. It's a fascinating world, this kind of 1950s English dressmaking, kind of post-war, far enough that it's not present, but not so far enough that it's not lingering, this kind of post-war 1950s London dressmaking is such an interesting place to set this character and this relationship. And you could have kind of, the dressmaking is important insofar as it characterizes Reynolds Woodcock, but the story that's being told here could be told in a variety of different settings with a variety of different types of characters. And everything about this film comes together to perfectly explore the relationship and journey between Daniel Day-Lewis and Vicky Kripes. And it's just sensational. I also love very much how subtle and unbombastic this film is, while still feeling impactful. There's no like explosions in this film, and yet it feels like there is, just in how you feel about it. I get to the end and I feel like I watched Fast and Furious, but I watched Daniel Day-Lewis like sew dresses for 90 minutes. It's almost like watching ASMR at points. It's so subtle and calming and exacting and perfectly measured, and that only adds to the story. It's so, so good. If I'm going, I'm pulling out the pop scale, and for the first time, I'm saying it's perfectly popped with layered butter. This is as good as movies get for me, for my taste, for what I'm interested in, for what I want to watch, for what I want to get out of a movie, for the types of things I want explored, for the way I want that story told. Phantom Thread is just, every time I watch it, I appreciate it more and more and more. I love this film. It's so, so good. What popped? The performances are truly sensational. Daniel Day-Lewis is once again just throwing down, putting his hog on the table and saying, look at me. But the performance is quite subtle at points. However, it's just incredible. Daniel Day-Lewis is great. Vicky Kripes as Alma is just so... I don't even know what the word is. It's one of those performances where you can tell that the actress is just acting at an elite level, but the character almost feels like it's being played by someone who's not a traditionally an actress. And it has that perfect melding of performance and character. And what Vicky Kripes does just with her face and with these subtle movements and with these looks and these glances is so amazing. And Leslie Manville just really rounds everything out. As great as these three performances are individually, those three performances together work sensationally for me. And so I think the performances in this film really, really stand out. In a film where a lot of things stand out, that's great. I also want to shout out the other thing that really pops for me in this film is the sound, not the score. The score is incredible and is amazing, but this film just uses sound in such an incredible way, and in a way that I haven't appreciated. And like, I just... In this film, I appreciate the sound so much. And in other films where they do an equally good job, I feel like I'm not appreciating it as much. Like, it just stands out to me. It just really makes this film tick how they use the sound, whether it's like captured on set, whether it's Foley'd in, whatever they're doing with it is so good. And then the score on top of it, the whole mix is great, but the use of sound in general really popped. I have absolutely nothing in the didn't popped category. Everything about this film is great. There's nothing that doesn't work for me. If you watch this and hate it, I'm so sorry, but I have literally nothing that I can pick apart in this film. I think it's absolutely perfect. If I were to recommend it, interestingly enough, I think this is the best movie that I've talked about so far. However, I think my recommendation is a little more tempered. Definitely, 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 if you want to watch a slower paced, detailed, and character-driven PTA film, if all of those things sound interesting to you, then I would go so far as to say this is a must watch. If none of that sounds interesting to you, you are probably not going to like this film. However, it's one that grows on you. It's one you'll appreciate more with time. Give it that first watch. See how you feel. If you hated it, fine, whatever, you hate it. But even if you liked it a little bit, this is one that just every time you watch it, it's going to grow and grow and grow. And eventually you'll be here with me on a podcast with a microphone saying, hey, this is perfectly popped with layered butter. Unfortunately, we have now arrived at the last film we will be discussing this week on This Week in Movies. It is Eyes Wide Shut, released in 1999, directed by Stanley Kubrick. Notable stars: Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, Sidney Pollack. Those were the three that really stood. I wanted to put Sidney Pollack on there, obviously just an icon. Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman are the real stars of this film, though. My context for watching: it's at the Rio, it's a Stanley Kubrick film. With those two ingredients, I'm going. Again, this is one they just had on the calendar. It's one I've never seen in cinemas. I actually should say that about Phantom Thread. That was the first time I'd watched Phantom Thread in the cinema. Like, I've only ever seen it like on my TV or on my iPad, or I've never seen it in the theater. So going to see that in the theaters was great. Eyes Wide Shut at the theaters this time. No iPad movies on this podcast. Every one of these movies this week I actually saw in the cinema, which is really, really... That's a lie. Pride and Prejudice was on our TV in our living room. Okay, well, now I'm just talking around myself in circles. Don't mind me. Anyways, Eyes Wide Shut. I have an interesting relationship with Kubrick, as I'm sure most people do. All of his movies always feel like you get to the end and you understood a lot of it, but you didn't quite understand everything. However, it doesn't feel unsatisfying. It feels like you just didn't get, like, it was there for you to get and you just didn't get it. Like you were robbing a store and took everything and you got outside and you looked at it and you're like, ah, it didn't feel like I got everything. And then every time you go back, there's like an infinite amount of stuff on the shelves for you to take. And it always feels like he's put it there for you and you just couldn't get it. So my overall thoughts on Eyes Wide Shut, this was probably the third or fourth time I've seen it going in. My relationship with it going in was that I really like this movie, but I never feel like I fully understood it or got it. Right? That's how I feel about most Kubrick movies, where I never fully understand or get them, which I think is the point. Overall thoughts. I really enjoyed the film this time around, right? This is the kind of movie that every time you see it, it's a great hang. It's interesting. It's funny. It's like watching a dream within a dream. It has that Stanley Kubrickian nature to the whole thing where it just feels like you've been transported to another world and this movie is happening all around you. It's really, really incredible. It's a very, very interesting and creative exploration of a bunch of different things in the same film that don't always go well in the same film, but are like very perfectly kind of thrown together and blended here. Here's what I wrote down. The exploration of sex, sensuality, power, social standing, fantasies, relationships, and control are all really well calibrated. That's what I wrote down, and that's what I believe. This film is juggling so many things that are all tertiary to one another, but kind of brings them together in one story that I thought was really, really great. There just isn't another film like it. Like almost all Kubrick films, there just isn't another film that's like this one. If you want to watch Eyes Wide Shut, I can't really recommend to you another movie like Eyes Wide Shut, and that might be my lack of having watched that other movie, if it exists, but I'm not sure it does. It just feels like it's so unique and singular to Stanley Kubrick. Like most Kubrick films, some aspects of this escape me, and I always have this feeling like I haven't quite gotten everything out of this film. Like I haven't quite squeezed all of the juice out of the orange, and this time, like the last several times, I feel like I understood more of it. I feel like I got to the end and felt more comfortable with where I sat in understanding the film, but I don't think this is a film that's ever going to be fully understood. And so I just have to keep going. It's like that with Kubrick. You just got to keep going in and in and in and in and squeezing more and more and more juice. But the trick is it's infinite and you're never going to get it all. So that's totally fine with me. The other thing that I put in my overall thoughts, but it really is kind of something that popped as well, is that this is a movie with a lot of nudity. There's a lot of sex happening on the screen for this entire movie, and yet it's like the least sexy and least horny movie, which I just thought was very fascinating. There are other films like this, there are other sequences like this in TV and movies where there's a lot of like sex things happening and there's a lot of boobs on the screen, but it never feels okay. It always just feels weird that you're watching it, and that is used to such like perfect effect in this film. If I'm giving it a pop scale rating, I'm saying it's fresh with butter. Like I think this is a really, really great film and one that I love revisiting and one that I think is just a really wild and fun ride, regardless if this is your first Kubrick film, if you've never watched this movie before, if you're never going to watch this movie again. Like I think you just go in one and done and really enjoy this. I think the more you watch it, the better it becomes, and that's how I feel about most Kubrick films. However, I really enjoy this. I think it's great. I just don't think I fully understand it. But yeah, pop scale rating, I'm going fresh with butter. What popped? Firstly, seeing Cruz and Kidman as young actors, or younger actors at least in this film, is always a joy and delight. Anytime you turn on an older film and see an actor that is now older to you be younger is great. It's like watching Titanic and seeing Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio be like 22. You're like, holy shit, this is crazy watching them be young. But this is a film about Cruz and Kidman being in a relationship, but they were actually dating in real life, and that really adds to how much I enjoy this film, is knowing that those two characters were dating in real life and knowing that that was an intention from Stanley Cooper to cast a real life couple in these roles. I thought was really, really great. I thought the exploration of social class specifically was really interesting. There are a lot of films, obviously tons and tons and tons of films that explore social class, but I found this one interesting because you have Tom Cruise, who plays a doctor, who's constantly on a scene-by-scene basis going from the most powerful, influential, high-class person in the room to the least powerful, least influential, lowest-class person in the room. And it's interesting to just view a doctor in that way socially within a film, so I thought that was great. There are sequences in this film that are, they feel like they're 5 minutes without a cut, and they might be. I haven't actually like rewound it to like check, but it feels like there are specifically two I can think of, but it feels like there are sequences of this movie where Stanley Kubrick just has two characters or three characters in a room, and he just has the camera, and they're just talking back and forth. They're just having a conversation, and he's just using the camera to follow them around, and it really, really stood out to me. It's so great. It's something you get in other films, but really feels like it's special in this one, and I really enjoyed that. The cutting of this movie adds to my not quite getting it feeling. However, I thought it was really well used in this film. Stanley Kubrick always, you know, in this film at least, tends to cut his scenes at the point where the outcome is obvious. So when you get to the next scene, it makes sense how we got to the outcome from the previous scene. However, he leaves you with just a little bit of tension and cutting a little bit early, so you don't know exactly what happened at the very end of the scene. The scene doesn't always end perfectly naturally, and it leaves you while you're watching it with a lot of like, whoa, well, I wonder what the last thing he said to him was before he left the set. It creates a lot of intrigue on a scene-by-scene basis. It's hard to follow while you're watching it, but it does create a lot of intrigue. And finally, the last thing that popped was the dreamlike nature of it all. I don't know if this film is meant to be watching a dream or watching a dream of a dream or watching a dream from another galaxy trying to interpret a dream of another person. I don't know what's going on here, but the dreamlike nature of this film, like you're watching someone describe a dream they have, really, really stands out to me in a way that I really enjoyed. There wasn't a lot about this movie that didn't pop for me, but there was one thing that always kind of just like, I don't know if I'm overthinking it or if it's kind of the point or if I'm just like nitpicking it. The way that New York, specifically the way that taxis are used in this film, always throws me off, just because this is so clearly New York built somewhere else. I can tell there are just like a handful of streets that are made and they're just kind of reconfigured. And it just doesn't feel like New York. It doesn't feel alive. It doesn't feel like there's any people there. Anytime Tom Cruise needs to go anywhere, he's in a taxi with no traffic, and that always bothers me. Anytime he needs to like meet someone outside, they're just like right there and no one else is around. And it just kind of, it adds to the dream within a dream nature, but it takes away from my immersion in the city of New York, and I just don't know what Stanley Kubrick, which direction he wanted to pull me in, but that's what I would say is the only thing that didn't pop for me. Here's my recommendation. If you can handle a Stanley Kubrick film, then this is fantastic. So if you've watched any of the other Kubrick films, and you're like, I can hang with the way this guy tells stories, they're all very different, but very like similar Kubrickian energy, right? If you're watching 2001 and you're having a good time, if you watch The Shining and you had a good time, there's all obviously all those other movies, then you're probably going to have a great time with this one. Be prepared, though, to get to the end of this movie and ponder it for a while, right? Be prepared to get to the end and go, I don't really understand all of that, but I had a good time. And then you can keep rewatching, keep squeezing the orange, keep getting more of that juice, but never quite fully understanding it. Holy smokes, everyone, we have made it to the end. Those were all the movies I watched this week. That will be it, unfortunately, until next week for This Week in Movies. Don't forget to follow me on Letterboxd at Van Bradley. If you just want to see what I'm watching this week, see what we're talking about on next week's podcast, that would be great. If you'd like to email the show, find a way, this email is the best, to let me know what movies you're watching this week. Feel free to use our little rubric here to kind of do a little film journal for the movies you're watching. I'd love to hear what you're watching. The email address for this podcast is vanbradleyonfilm@gmail.com. That is also all of the social handles. If you're on TikTok, if you're on YouTube Shorts or whatever, Van Bradley on Film will be the name over there. Please be sure to leave this podcast a rating wherever you're listening to it, especially if you have a good rating to leave. That would be super ideal. 5 stars would be great. Perhaps you could even subscribe to it if you're having a good time and want to catch up next week. And maybe we'll just talk about other things on different episodes of this show. But Next Week in Movies will be coming back next week, probably on Monday. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you had a good time, and we'll see you next time at the cinema.